the beginning of Parshas Bashalach, of this week's Parsha, presents, I think, a lot of contrast, a lot of paradoxes and difficulties. Let's just run through it quickly so I can try to point out to you what I mean. When Parai sent off the people, Hashem didn't have them go through the land of the Plishtim, even though it was close. Kiyomar Elohim, or because it was close, Kiyomar Elohim, Peninachem Amber Esam Milchama V'Shav Mitzrayim. If the people go through the land of the Plishtim, they will encounter a battle immediately from the Plishtim. And the people can change their mind. They can have a change of heart. They can say, uh-oh, there's a war. Maybe better we shouldn't go this way. V'shavu Mitzrayima. And they'll go down to Mitzrayim. Rashi says, Milchama kugayin milchemes v'yirir ha'amaleki v'haknani. Imhochu derech yosher ha'yuchayzer. If they went through the straight path, so it would be an easy way for them to get back to Mitzrayim. Right, that's two ways how they translate Kikoraifu. It would have been the shortcut, right, to get there at Yisrael, but nevertheless they went the long way, or it would have been too short to come back to Mitzrayim. Rather, they went a longer way. By the time they would encounter a battle, it would be already very, very far. So Hashem didn't want them to encounter a battle, because if they would, they would turn around and come home. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was afraid of. So instead Hashem had them go through the Midbar to the Yamsuf. V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael mi'eretz Mitzrayim. Jewish people went out, armed, ready, prepared. And the pasuk goes on to speak about a few more details. And then, after describing where they went, and that pillar of Hashem's cloud that went ahead of them, the next paragraph begins as follows. V'yidaber Hashem al Moshe leimar. Hashem said to Moshe, Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yashuvu. Speak to the Jewish people and tell them to come back. Come back in the direction of Mitzrayim. V'yachnu lifnei pi hachiros. They should go and encamp near, in front of pi hachiros, which Rashi says was Pisom. Right? Remember the two cities, Pisom and Ramses, that the Jewish people built? Right? Pi hachiros was Pisom. In other words, they should head back towards Mitzrayim, to the edge of Mitzrayim. V'nidel v'nayam lifnei ba'al tzafayim, nicha chaysachanu al hayam. They should head back in this direction. Why should they do so? V'amar Paro livnei Yisrael, and Paro will say regarding the Bnei Yisrael, Nivuchim heim boret, sogar aleim hamidbar. They're confused. Right? The midbar has somehow closed in on them. They're mixed up. They've lost their bearings. They've lost their sense of direction. Look, they're retracing their steps. They're coming back in this direction. What's going on? So he'll sense weakness. He'll sense vulnerability on the Jewish people. V'chizakti eslev paro v'rodaf achareyem. I will harden the heart of Paro and he will chase after them. V'kovda b'faro v'cholchelo. And then I will bring honor to myself through Paro and all of his forces. Mitzrayim ol no ki ani Hashem. Because then the ultimate miracle will happen. So Hashem was telling Moshe to tell the Jewish people to head back in the direction of Mitzrayim, so that Paro will chase after them, so that they will encounter a milchama, a war. So look, okay, so paradox number one. The parsha begins, and Hashem says, I don't want them to go that way, because they're going to see a war, and then they're going to back away. They're going to retrace their steps. So I'll go this way, where they won't have that. Then Hashem tells them to go back towards Mitzrayim, closer to Mitzrayim, and to go back in a way that's going to entice the Egyptians into war, that the Egyptians will come and fight them. Uh-oh. Right? You know, what are you doing that for? I thought you're trying to avoid a battle. Instead, you're going into the battle. Okay. And then, to top it off, the king of Mitzrayim was told that the people had run away. Whatever this means, Rashi says, already they were supposed to go for 3 days. It didn't seem after 3 days they should already be making moves to come back. Right? They weren't making moves to come back, so he realized that they weren't planning to come back so fast. Alternatively, other pshatim exist He saw how confused they were. He saw that they were running instead of headed to a specific destination. And the heart of Paro and his servants changed regarding the people. And they said, what did we do, Kishilachim as Yisrael Miyavdeinu, that we sent the Jewish people away from serving us? So he harnessed his horse, his chariot, his people, and they took it. And Vayechazek Hashem Aslev Paro, Hashem hardened the heart of Paro, Melech Mitzrayim, Vayudayf Acharei B'nei Yisrael, he chased after the Jewish people. B'nei Yisrael Yitzim V'yarama, the Jewish people are leaving with a high hand, triumphantly and strong, not running, not chasing, but strong and triumphant. But now Paro is chasing after them. Now what's going to happen when Paro chases after them? Okay, so that's where Sheni comes. We go on. Vayudifu Mitzrayim Achareim, Mitzrayim chased after them, and they caught them. All these people, Paro he kriv, Paro gets close. Vayisub Bnei Yisrael Seineim, and Yisrael lift up their eyes. Vinei Mitzrayim Nesei Achareim, the Egyptians are running after them. Surprised? That's what they were doing on purpose, right? Wasn't that the plan? The plan was they were going to go back. V'chizakti asle Paro, v'rfa achareihem. Right? I'm going to harden the heart of Paro and he's going to come after them. So this is exactly what would be expected. So the Jewish people would presumably have been prepared for this, known that this was going to happen. They would be, you know, good to go from this whole thing. But what happens? Instead, they panicked. They were very afraid of Yisrael El Hashem. They cried out to Hashem. And they said to Moshe, there weren't enough burial places in Mitzrayim. They had to take us out here to the Midbar where there's more space for us to die. What did you do to us that you took us out of Mitzrayim? So here we have it. That when the Jewish people ultimately come out, what happens? Paro chases after them, exactly as predicted, exactly as anticipated, and yet it does indeed throw the Jewish people off. It confuses them greatly. So what's the Seder HaFar? What's the order of things? In the beginning, Hashem says, don't go this way because you're going to be afraid. You're going to be afraid, you're going to turn back to Mitzrayim. Then Hashem has them deliberately turn back towards Mitzrayim. And they're ready to turn back towards Mitzrayim. And they go, and the idea is that they're going to draw the Egyptians into battle. And when the battle comes, indeed the Jewish people pass. So you would say, okay, that's right. If they would have gone to the Plishtim, they would have ran back to Mitzrayim. Now here you know that they can't run back to Mitzrayim anymore. Because Mitzrayim is chasing after them. Right? And they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, oi, right, we shouldn't have left Mitzrayim. Okay, so go back to Mitzrayim now. Evidently, at this point, they can't do that. Evidently, at this point, they can't do that. That option right now is closed before them. Right? The Bnei Yisrael are screaming, screaming, screaming. What are we going to do? Mitzrayim's coming from here. The sea is from there. Very simple. You guys, you're the ones who are always saying, let's go back to Mitzrayim. So go out like this, with your hands up, and say, okay, we lost. No, Mitzrayim wasn't an option. Mitzrayim were after them. They were after them. So something has changed there. So what is this? What is this whole dynamic here? What's happening in this parsha? Okay, we understand, of course, that part of it is this great hook that has to be brought in order to drown the Mitzrayim in the Yamsuf, because that's the coup de grace. That's the final thing that's going to finish off this whole thing. The ultimate culmination of it is that Mitzrayim should disappear into the Yam Suf. As Hashem says, V'kavda b'farei v'chol chela v'yodah Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. Right? That Mitzrayim will see that I'm Hashem. We know that this has to happen, so it's going to take a little bit of a twisted path in order to lure them out and to get them into the sea. But what are they thinking? What are the words? What is Moshe Rabbeinu telling the Jewish people when he tells them to turn around and draw out the Mitzrayim? It's very hard. It's very hard. Okay, we're going to work on it. We'll try to figure it out here together to understand the dynamics of what's going on, but it's very hard. Now, there are those amongst the Mefarshim. You find this in Achrayim. I don't know, in early Rishayim, it's hard to really see so much, but in Achrayim, like the Netziv, like Reb Zalman Sarutzkin, right? As Daim Lutaira, the Malbim also seems to go with this, that there's a distinction in the pasuk to some degree between Paro va'avodav, and the Mitzrim and Egypt as a whole. See, what happened here is that if you look at the psukim closely. If you look at the psukim closely, so what does it say? So it says, Paray will say to Israel, V'chizakti aslev Paray v'radaf achareihem. I'll harden the heart of Paray and he will chase after them. V'kavda b'faray v'chol chelei, I'll be honored through what I do to Paray and his forces. And Mitzrayim will know that I am Hashem. Right? Now, Mitzrayim is the survivors. The Mitzrayim are the survivors. Mitzrayim is everybody else. They'll know because they'll see what happened to Paro and to his elite crack troops. Right? They would be the ones to sink into the sea, but not Mitzrayim. And then the pasuk says, but the Levav Paray Vavodov turned against the people. Not just Paray, v'chizakti aslev Paray, but Levav Paray Vavodov, his servants. In other words, the Mitzrim, who so many times before were chiding Paro, don't let this keep happening, let him go already. This is bringing down the Mitzrayim. But even the servants of Paro, they also started to change. Right? And in fact, right, you have the famous Rashi, where it says he took 600 Rechev Bochur, 600 chariots. Where did he get 600 horses? Or 1,200? Or 2,400? How many horses there were per chariot to go after them? Says Rashi, you know where it came from the people who were fearful of Hashem. And so they took their horses and they brought them inside so they wouldn't get destroyed by the Borad. Says Rashi, when Chazal say, look at this. These are the best of the Egyptians, the ones who are God-fearing. And yet what do they do when it comes time to chase after the Jewish people? Who's sending their horses? These great Yorei Shamayim. Right? So Rashi brings what Chazal say, right? Kosher Shebemitzrim. Right? Take the best of Mitzrim, Haroig, kill him. Right? These are the good ones. And look what they're doing, they're arming Paro. So, right, this Rashi also adds to the sense that what happened was that suddenly it seemed that all of Mitzrayim was ganging up on the Jewish people. So this confused them. Maybe the Jewish people expected that Paro, with his hardened heart, and a few of his, comrades in arms would come after the Jewish people, the ones that he would be able to, rope in to do it. But look what happened. What happened? Vayirfu Mitzrayim achareihem. Not Paro, but Mitzrayim chased after them. Kolsus Paro, Rechav Paro, Uparosha v'cheloi. Uparo ikriv, when Paro came close, Vayisu neisil tenei v'nei Mitzrayim noisei achareihem. They saw all of the Egyptians, all of Egypt chasing after them. So, in one variety or another, that's the way they see it. That the Bnei Israel, okay, Paray, Hashem's focused on hardening his heart, and he was the last one to get it. But the people of Mitzrayim, generally, they got it, didn't they? So they were expecting a little bit of a challenge from Paro. But they were surprised by the essential reversal of all of Mitzrayim to come pouring out to go after the Jewish people. And maybe that's why, even though they agreed originally to the plan, but now they panicked, and now they changed direction. It's a pshat. It's a significant pshat. Significant explanation. In this parsha. The idea behind it, of course, to some degree would be that Klal Yisrael wants to see in this V'yadu Mitzrayim Ki Ani Hashem, like there's some sort of like an incremental progress. And this was a tremendous setback. It wasn't, like the anticipated. It was like, it seemed like everything that they had accomplished, quote unquote, or that had been accomplished by Hashem through the Makos was all undone if they're coming all now and chasing after them. I tell you the truth, I'm saying over this pshat, and there are elements in the psukim that indicate that there is such a distinction, and I think that there's certainly something significant there, but I don't understand it so well. Because, look, Paro changed his mind at Makas Bechoros, that he also melted. Right? He came out and said, get out of here, go. Right? Vayibashalach Paro Yisrael. Paro sent off the Jewish people. So he also broke. So his heart is going to be hardened. Okay, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said his heart will be hardened. He didn't say the rest of the Egyptians' hearts will be hardened, but they came along. Okay, I see it. But to some degree, it's all part of, it would seem to me, to some degree, that it's all part of the same game. Especially when you factor in the idea that everything that had been discussed until now was that the Jewish people would go for 3 days. Just because the rest of the Egyptians were maskim, agreed that they can go for 3 days, when it becomes clear to them that the Jewish people are going long term, who says that they're still going to agree? Not just Paran, but everybody. So again, what's shocking the Jewish people here? What's making them cry? What's making them scream? Why is this different? Why are they suddenly saying, let's go back to Mitzrayim? There's a simpler pshat. And the simpler meaning is, it's, excuse me for this mushel, for this metaphor. I know a lot of schools are going on vacation next couple of days, so I'm thinking of this metaphor. You know, people stand in line at an amusement park to go on a roller coaster, right? Because they're brave. And they say, I'm going to go on a roller coaster. It goes up and down. Come on, you know, it's, they have safety inspectors. They're designed. Everybody can go up and down, and everybody stays in their seat. You know, that's by and large. As long as you follow the rules, everything should be okay. No, but Leinu Rachmana Litzlan. You know, every summer a couple of people come falling out of a roller coaster. Rachmana Litzlan. But you know, by and large, it's safer than driving to work. So that's all they do. They often then watch them. Watch them when they're getting done. They go down. The sheer panic. The fear. Oh my gosh, right? When you're facing it, it's like a whole different story. So what happened here? Maybe it was a roller coaster. So I'm doing an alternative reading over here. Right? There's a roller coaster. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Jewish people, turn back and go towards Mitzrayim. Those Mitzrayim are going to come after you. Paro is going to say, oh, now's the time. Look at them. They're all confused. And he's going to come after. When the hardest part is coming after, he's going to come after with the Mitzrim. And I'm going to show they're going to see the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu like they never saw it before. It's going to be fantastic. And the Jewish people say, great. They get in line. Right? And they do exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu says. And then, you know, it starts coming down. The Mitzrim are coming after the Jewish people. And Kali says, oh my gosh, what's going on over here? What's going on? Mitzrayim, they're chasing after us. Where are we? They cry out to Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's going on? Let me go back to Mitzrayim. Enough of this. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows them. He covered up the fire. You know it, you plan it. It's not a kasha from the beginning of the parsha. In the beginning of the parsha, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to send them to the Plishtim. They're going to see a battle. They're going to turn around. That's not the battle. This is about Mitzrayim. There's a chapter called Yetzias Mitzrayim, which isn't finished yet. It cannot be interrupted by the Plishtim. It cannot be interrupted by the Amalekim. Mitzrayim isn't over yet. And there's still one more major dip in this roller coaster with Mitzrayim before they're going to come gliding in, finished with Mitzrayim. And then, Yodu Yami Hashem. Yodu Yisrael, Yami Hashem, yeah. But also the Jewish people, it'll be said on them that B'nai Yisrael, Vayiru Ames Hashem, Vayamin Hashem, Hashem. That they're going to come to real, real Yiras Hashem and real, real Emunah of Hashem. But when it's happening, when the Mitzrayim are closing in, it's not so simple. Good, makes sense. Good marshal. Isn't it good marshal? Vacation marshal. Okay, I think to some degree that's also that's a pshat here that's part of the picture. It's very strong. It's very, very telling when we when we see this and when we think about this. And I want to really, what I want to do now here, a little bit in the balance of what we're going to talk about here tonight, is sort of take this apart a little bit more, piece by piece. Yitzias Mitzrayim happened for the Jewish people in phases. Phases, sections. This is what we see. We had many, you know, different aspects of it. The whole Yosef saga, right? Then when things develop, when Moshe Rabbeinu first comes. But let's even just talk about the 7 days of Pesach. Right? The first phase, when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim was still there. It was still, by and large, intact. It was wounded, it was bleeding, but it was not gone. Right? They had been hit by the Eser Matos. It affected them. It affected their crops. It affected their animals. It affected Ein Bayis Asher, Ein Shames, the firstborn of all the Egyptian families. Look what happened. They had died. But Mitzrayim was still there. There was still a Mitzrayim for the Jewish people potentially to come back to, and there was still a Mitzrayim to chase after the Jewish people. The Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, but they left on borrowed time. They left. You give us a little leave of absence. We're coming back. We're going to borrow your dishes, the silver, the gold, the garments, and we're going to come back. Klal Yisrael left, and they were still to some degree connected to Mitzrayim. And what would happen at Kriyas Yamsuf 6 days later on the 7th day of Pesach would be, as Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jewish people in his Parsha, finito, final. Now Mitzrayim would never be seen again as they were seen that day. Now the Mitzrayim were sunk into the Yamsuf. They were gone. Now it wasn't about the Jewish people maybe being gone for a little bit and coming back. Now it was finished. Now we have what we call Bizas Hayam, the plunder, the spoils of the Yamsuf. The spoils of the Yamsuf wasn't just the nice ornaments on the horses that got washed up on the seaside. The spoils of the Yamsuf were that now all the dishes that they took wasn't borrowed anymore. Now there's no more Mitzrayim. Now it's ours. Now we keep it. Right? That's why it's such a compounded booty, such a compounded gain that the Jewish people had now as a result of all of this. So it's going from a first phase to a final phase. A first phase of separation to a final phase. Yeah? They're still very much connected. When you leave and you're still thinking to some degree you come back, you're still thinking to some degree you're connected. Yes, Klal Yisrael wasn't finally broken. Chazal say, the Yerushalmi says, classic famous Yerushalmi, that the reason why they didn't say a Shira when they left Mitzrayim, even though Chazal say they said Hallel on the night of Pesach, but the Shira Sayam, the song which is recorded in the Torah, was because the Geula wasn't finished. They were still connected to Mitzrayim. They were still connected to Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim to them. And so, there's phase one, and then there's the final phase of separation, the destruction of Mitzrayim. This is just simply the mechanics of it. And because that's the case, as long as Mitzrayim is there, and Mitzrayim are the oppressors and the powers over the Jewish people, then Klal Yisrael recognizes it, they see it, and they have a fear of Mitzrayim. Ein mei daima shmiya l'ri'ya. Right? This is what's written over here, one of the things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them that this is what's going to happen. I'm going to destroy Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim's going to come chasing after you. Okay, we're ready to do it. Right? It's like, don't worry, right? The roller coaster, there are going to be all kinds of dips. It's going to be really scary. It's okay, I'm ready to do it. But when you see it, when Mitzrayim is after them, it's a different story. The feeling, the panic that Klal Yisrael has because Mitzrayim is still there. Mitzrayim, they left. But Mitzrayim is still there. And as long as Mitzrayim is still there, Klal Yisrael still has a fear of Mitzrayim, a sense of going back to Mitzrayim. But there at the Yam Suf, there is really no choice of going back to Mitzrayim. They know at this point in time, as much as they're turning to Moshe Rabbeinu and saying, "We told you you shouldn't go back to Mitzrayim. We shouldn't have left Mitzrayim. We told you we should have stayed there. Why did you do this to us?" But at the same time, return to Mitzrayim at this point in time is not an option. It's not a possibility. It's not a possibility. Why not? I don't know exactly how to answer the question. Maybe it's only because of Paro heading after them with this blood-curdling anger, but Paro didn't want to take them back. Paro would be told to him, my question before about why didn't you just wave the white flag and go back? You know, why doesn't that work? You know, on a practical level, it's difficult. In Chazal, an expression is used. It says, "Uvnei Yisrael yaitzim biyad rama." The Jewish people left with a high hand. They left with a high hand. What does it mean, biyad rama? So simple pshatim. Rashi is bigvura givaya umefursemes. They were going with strength, with a high and public show of strength. That's how Klal Yisrael was leaving. Some of the Rishonim speak about the fact that, oh, at this point they're going out the Yad Rama, but as soon as they see Mitzrayim, suddenly their hand drops. Right? They panic and they lose that position of strength. On the other hand, Chazal speak about the Bnei Yisrael Yaitzim Yad Rama is that they were Meshabchim or Mefarim. They were giving praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what happened. And we can only imagine, even again, if there's no formal Shira that's being described here, but Klal Yisrael, they went out to the Midbar to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So even though whatever degree there's an element of a Rus there, but they're going out of Mitzrayim, they're giving praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Mitzrayim were, say Chazal, Mecharfim Umagat. Mitzrayim were blaspheming. They were cursing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How could they do otherwise? How could they go after the Jewish people who they had just seen the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and everything without some level of deriding and negating and blaspheming HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So there is as well this peace, this dynamic here between the two of them. And the question which we have here, what's happening is Klal Yisrael is facing Mitzrayim here like has happened for Klal Yisrael over the past 210 years of facing Mitzrayim, is, do you see Mitzrayim, do you see the Egyptians as a force to be reckoned with, as something over you to indeed deal with altogether? Let me try to explain. There's a passage in the Zohar that I've shared with some of you before. The Zohar says that the koach that the Egyptians had to subordinate the Bnei Yisrael, to be meshabed the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, came from the fact that the Jewish people went to eat the lechem, the bread of Mitzrayim. In other words, as the Shem Yishmol and others explain, Klal Yisrael went to Mitzrayim as dependents. Oh, they didn't have to. They could have gone to Mitzrayim seeing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had engineered everything that Yosef should be the king of Mitzrayim, and therefore that was the place they were supposed to be, because Yosef was the king of Mitzrayim and Hashem had put into his hands the sustenance of the Bnei Yisrael, along with the sustenance of the whole region, so they were going there because Hashem had called them there. That's one way. And another way is that, you know, Mitzrayim is a very good economy in very bad times. And that's where we can find the food. So therefore, we're going to go and we're going to be the guests of the Egyptian people in order to be able to have it. Right? It's the same situation that I described in the first, except the first one describes Hashem providing for them in Mitzrayim, and the second one describes Mitzrayim providing for the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. And when the Zohar is saying that Klal Yisrael went there and they saw themselves as being dependent on the Egyptians, we're alive because the Egyptians are providing us with the food that we need. And if we're alive because of the Egyptians, then we can also be dead because of the Egyptians. If we live by the Egyptians, then we are enslaved by the Egyptians. Baruch hagever asher yiftach b'Hashem, v'hayov Hashem miftach lei. Blessed is the person who puts their trust in Hashem, and then Hashem will be indeed their security. When you recognize it's coming from Him, then He says, and I'm going to take care of it. But when we look in other directions and we imagine strength coming from other sources, it's what we call a self-fulfilling prophecy. That indeed ends up happening. Mitzrayim was able to subordinate the Jewish people because the Jewish people saw themselves as being subject to the whim and the strength of Mitzrayim. That's the idea there. What Klal Yisrael had to free themselves of was not just the shackles of Egyptian slavery, of the technical difficulties of being there, Meshubah the Mitzrayim. They didn't even just have to free themselves of the face of cultures and who knows what else. But Klal Yisrael had to understand what Geula is supposed to bring a person to be able to understand is that there is nothing that controls their destiny other than when Klal Yisrael sees the Mitzrayim disappear into the Yam Suf, it's not just, oh, fantastic, no more Mitzrayim, no more Egyptians. It's not just no more Egyptians. Mitzrayim did have a power over them. And it's nice to be rid of an enemy, but what does it help when you have Peloshes and Yeshve Kenoan and Amalek? Everybody else, you know, there are plenty of enemies lining up to follow on the heels of the Egyptian. What difference does it make? What Klal Yisrael had to have in Yitzias Mitzrayim was to see that a power like Mitzrayim is not really a power at all. It's not really a power. It's not conveniently getting rid of one enemy. It's demonstrating that the ultimate power of everything is the power that you're standing in the hands of a Kosher. I don't think I'm saying anything radical. Plus, of course, isn't that simply what we're supposed to be doing? We can have a way of viewing things where we look at the scheme of the Arba Goliaths, of the four historic exiles of the Jewish people, which are all besides for Mitzrayim, of course, right? The Babylonians and the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans, Bavel and Parasimadai and Yavan and Edom. We can say, okay, look what happened was we had a goal with them, and then we got rid of him. Ah, Baruch Hashem, fantastic, we're redeemed from him. But uh-oh, there's somebody else coming, right? Each time, there's somebody else. There's 70 nations. Okay, then we're going to have 70 of these things, right? But it keeps happening and happening. But the idea of the Geula isn't that we got rid of this one, okay, we can breathe now until the next one comes along. The idea of the Geula is supposed to be that here you were, and you were living in a time where you thought they mattered. And they don't. You see that ultimately, in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only that matters. Only that matters. So it's true, theoretically, to some degree, that when Klal Yisrael went through Yitzias Mitzrayim, they know that everything is in the hands of the Kodesh Baruch. But as long as when you see Mitzrayim bearing down on you, you still panic, do you really understand that everything is in the hands of the Kodesh Baruch? Do you really understand that? You know, when the thing comes at you, you know, and you know it's on a rubber band or something like that, or whatever, it'll stop. And you blink. Don't have any help, it's going to blink. Right? My fellow on the roller coaster. It's true. But is there something beyond that where the person doesn't even blink? Where the person doesn't even scream? When Klal Yisrael said, we knew we should have stayed in Mitzrayim. What they were saying was, you see, Mitzrayim's still there. They are a force. Now, the Jewish people would say it later too. After Mitzrayim had already sunken into the sea, when Klal Yisrael had other issues, and so on and so forth, they would still choose to be under the control of Mitzrayim, rather than under this great control of HaKadosh Baruch, which, for whatever reasons, at different points, they would have struggles with. But right now, on the verge, on the threshold of Kasher Yisem Es Mitzrayim Emelis Yisivim L'Rasayim Adaylam, what's under negotiation is whether Mitzrayim is a force, whether it's something to be reckoned with. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows us in the Kriyas Yamsuf, He shows us His hand, so that Klal Yisrael sees Hashem in a way, as the Chazal said, that Rasa Shivchal Ayam Mashal Loi Ro'o Yecheskel Ben Buzi, that the profound seeing of the power of Hashem and the presence of Hashem that we saw, that the simplest of us saw in Mitzrayim, was beyond that which the greatest of our prophets saw at other times. It was no Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim's nothing. It's not just, okay, now Mitzrayim is gone. This is what has to be seen. Through Mitzrayim, this whole thing is supposed to be demonstrated. That's what the whole tahalich, the whole process of Mitzrayim is supposed to teach. Mitzrayim stood for this thing, to say, Liyaori v'ani asisiu. There's no God, we're the power that does it. The whole process of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to say, there's nobody has such power. None of those who exile. Ma'akodesh Baruch Hu, Matzileinu Miyodam, Shlo Echad Bilvada Madaleinu L'chaliseinu. It's not just Parah. This is not just the story of Parah. Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just the story of Parah. Yetzias Mitzrayim is the story of Hashem. And the story of Hashem is Hashem versus Parah, and Hashem versus Haman, and Hashem versus Saddam, and Hashem versus and then Hashem versus everybody. It's to show that everything else is missing. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I don't want to take them there to Eretz Plishtim. Because they're going to come to the Plishtim and we haven't finished. We haven't shown them the reduction of a nation yet enough. So they'll panic. They'll turn around. They'll go back to Mitzrayim. Let me finish with Mitzrayim. Let me finish with Mitzrayim. Let me take them through a path where it's not like we're trying to avoid conflict. We're trying to avoid any other conflict. Oh, I'm going to draw Mitzrayim back into the conflict. I guess that's where the front, that's where this is going to happen. It's going to be the conclusion of the battle with Mitzrayim that's going to conclude and complete this picture of the ultimate defeat of someone who exercised so much power over the Jewish people, where there was so much dependence that Klal Yisrael felt on Mitzrayim. We were eating from them. We were developing in them. No, none of it. The Klal Yisrael is supposed to be able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu at that instant. So I think, you know, to take it just a little step beyond just simply, okay, we heard that Hashem is going to show everything, but now when we really see it, we panic first and then we respond. It's not even just the roller coaster. It's the reemergence of Mitzrayim. We can speak, like some of the Mefarshim, like you said before, is they're surprised. They knew Paro would come back. But would the whole Mitzrayim come back? No. I would dare say it's not just a question of the numbers of how many people came back. Oh, we thought we convinced those already, and now we see even they need to be convinced further. Paro stood as Mitzrayim. The simple reading of the Pasuk is, Uparo ikriv, and the name Mitzrayim osei achrayim, whoever's Paro, whoever's with Paro, it's Mitzrayim, it's Mitzrayim, it's Mitzrayim. That same magnetic call that the Jewish people felt of being stuck and dependent on Mitzrayim, it was there, it was alive, it was asking them back. And so, Chol Yisrael said, Kodesh Baruch Hu says he's going to draw Mitzrayim after them in order to destroy them. But when Chol Yisrael in fact feels threatened by them in such an intense way, they say, we are still vulnerable to Mitzrayim. So what's this all about? That we know that we're supposed to trust in our Kodesh Baruch Hu. We know that we're not supposed to feel, you know, vulnerability to anything else. But I think to some degree that part of what we have to understand here is that this is the nature of a golus and the struggle of coming free of a golus. Golus has many dimensions. The dimensions of the dispersion of the Jewish people, the dimensions of being away from our holy land, from Eretz Yisrael. Right? Those are all dimensions of Golus. Those two things are dimensions of Golus. But there's another fundamental aspect, which is what we call Shibud Malchias, to be subject to these kingdoms. To be subject. To be subject, not to be sovereign, or, more accurately, not to be subject to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whether it's in Mitzrayim, where we went there for the bread, whether it's in Bavel, to where we marched in chains, we seemed to be under the hands, dependent on something else. You know, in the Chumash, it says that you're going to go into other countries and send you the ghosts, right? Right? It uses different expressions in the Psukim many, many times. You're going to go there and you're going to serve other gods. So there's such a translation in Chazal, it's the translation which is used by Unkelus consistently, many times in the Chumash where this comes up, which is not saying you're going to go there and you're going to worship other gods. What you're going to do is you're going to go there and you'll still be Jews. And you're still going to serve Hashem. But you're going to be serving nations. And those nations serve other gods. So therefore we say, it's as if you're serving those gods. Now what does that mean? That means because you pay taxes to the government of England, and the government of England supports the Anglican Church, so therefore that means that you're serving other gods? That's one level of Hashem. Right? You're serving the government that's helping, that in turn serving Avodah Zarah. So you're strengthening the Avodah Zarah. But on another level, what we're describing here is that in Golus, you feel your faith to some degree tied into and dependent on another nation. And even when in theory, to some degree, you see them brought to their knees. But every time they flex their muscle, every time they show a strength, as long as they exist, we are aware and we are fearful. We are aware and we are vulnerable. And Gula is really understanding what little kayach they have. What little kayach they have. Mitzrayim lying on the side of the sea, and I think it's not the elimination of a particular opponent. then we miss it. It's the elevation of the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The elevation of the power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I wish I could make this point clear. Struggling to make it clear. But I would just conclude by this aspect of the Chazal that I quoted to you before. The last words before Sheni. Uvnei Yisrael Yetzim B'Yad Ramah. The Jewish people were going out B'Yad Ramah with a high hand, a strongly held hand, at the Shira of the Zimra, with song and with praise, giving praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mitzrayim chasing after them is blaspheming HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because Hashem had brought upon him so many makos, so they were upset at him. No, what it is that Mitzrayim in its last gasp, is saying, no, Hashem doesn't control. Hashem doesn't control. Okay, he's a sparring partner. He beat us at the last match, but we're still here. We're back. We're coming. We're going to try to take all Yisrael back. That's the chirufim, the gedufim. That's the blasphemy. The blasphemy is that you think you can do anything. The blasphemy is that you think you have power. What we're all supposed to learn over here, v'yadu ki ani Hashem, is to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all the power. And that Mitzrayim is just Shevet Apoy. Mitzrayim, whatever power they had was just because it was, to some degree, the rod of Hashem, a tool, an instrument of Hashem. You have no power. Mitzrayim, you have no power. Klal Yisrael, Jewish people, don't you know, Mitzrayim has no power. No. Has been made famous in recent years as almost like a gimmick, a memra of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, a statement of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes it as a skula yedua, as a known skula. All you have to do is attach the word skula to anything and it'll be a bestseller. Okay, what's the skula yedua? Rav Chaim Volozhiner says is that a person who encounters difficulty, challenge, someone who's standing up against them, and so on and so forth, they have to think one thing. And what's that? Ein oid milvadai. There is nothing, no power other than His, other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a Gemara in Chulin, which speaks about one of the Amiroim who encountered a certain machshef, a certain witch, a sorceress, like in Mitzrayim. And she wanted to cast the spell on him while she was digging up the earth that he had stepped on, whatever it is, it's a whole maisa. She said, I don't have to worry. Einoid milvada. There's nothing other than a kosher. Oh, there's plenty of things out here in the world that if you look at them, you can worry about them and the power that they can exercise over you. But if you just firmly say in your mind, Ein oid milvadai, and whomever you see, and whatever you see, and wherever you are, and whoever's food you're eating, and whoever's whoever generosity you seem to be enjoying, you say, Ein oid milvadai. That's the rod of Hashem's upset, this is the hand of Hashem's graciousness. It's just Him. Then, not to worry about anything else. Right? And such a story about this one, those bears, beasts going around, seeing the fantastic story about the Briscoe Rav in the years of the war. Right? Einan Muvadai, Einan Muvadai, Einan Muvadai. He didn't just say it, he thought it. It's seared into his mind, into his heart, into every aspect of him. There's no control that anything has over me other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Finish. That's it. And the person didn't even see him. It was like he was invisible. Mises. Could all be true. You know, Shira Ruderman used to say that if you believe all the stories that people say, you're a fool. And if you don't believe any of the stories that people say, then you're an apikairis. You know, you're a heretic. Yeah, no. The principle is the bread and butter of Yahdus. The principle, whether it'll work, you know, on a specific encounter, right? And whether that's a result of that Hashem wanted it to happen anyway, or whether that's a result of that you didn't really feel the inner Malvada, you were saying it and trying and great, but you didn't get it perfectly. Who knows? Whatever it is. But the idea that what this is about is Ein Oid Malvada, is recognizing nothing else controls it. That's the bread and butter. And yes, sometimes it takes a story like this of Klal Yisrael thinking, wow, we saw Hashem, look how He took us out of Mitzrayim. But then when Mitzrayim's coming, and you invited them to come. You expected them to come. But when they're coming, they're still there. So when they're gone, Klal Yisrael's cured. Or just, the Shine's lying there on the side. That's the power. That's the invisible power of Kriyas Yamsu. Vayiru ha'ames Hashem vayaminu v'Hashem et Meshavti. Vayayisro'ez Mitzrayim mezes v'zeh. Kriyas Yamsu said, like you saw Mitzrayim today, you will never see them again. You will never see them again like this. Vayotze es amoy Yisrael mitaycham. What we say at Marav every night. Vayotze es amoy Yisrael mitaycham. Hashem took His Jewish people out from them. L'cherus olam. For eternal freedom. What does that mean? For eternal freedom. For eternal freedom. We were free from the Mitzrayim until the next nation came and subordinated us. But when we integrate what happened when our Kodesh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim and sunk those Mitzrayim on the sea, and we saw Ze Eli Anu Va'amu Hashem Yimoichu Yailam Va'ed, then that meant that even when there were Babylonians, they're not in charge. We lose a little, they're not in charge. There's nothing else. That's the lesson of Geulah. And that's a close one to see. It's not just a roller coaster. It has to go from Ein Adayim Ashmi L'Re'iyah. Oh, we're scared. Right? We thought we could take it when we just talked about it, but when we see it, it hurts us. To Ein Adayim Ashmi L'Re'iyah. To Vayar Yisrael Shvitzrayim Yisrael. Going from Mitzrayim subordinated to Mitzrayim vaporized. They're not there, they were nothing. Even when they were there, they were nothing. Oh, easier said than felt. Easier said than felt. But say it enough. Say it enough. Think about it enough. Think about when you daven, when you say those words over and over, the invitation, the introduction to every tefillah. Ze Eli Anu V'Anu Hashem Yimoich Ve'Elam V'Ed. Geula v'tfila, right? Remember Mitzrayim. Remember Cherus Eila. Remember nothing else. Then you turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then it makes sense. Then it makes sense. May we be zeicha. He may take from Mitzrayim arenu niflois. HaKadosh Baruch Hu to show us again the miracles that He did when He took us out of Mitzrayim. May we realize that in all the goliaths that we're in, all the things that we could be afraid of, that we could feel dependent on, that it's nothing. Ein Eid Milvad Eksik.